Oh, hey, guys. It's Scott Brennan here, and you are tuning into the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. And if you've never listened before, you are in luck because this is probably my favorite episode of the podcast. Riley Breckenridge from Thrice, one of my all-time favorite bands, if not my favorite band, joins us for about a 45-minute interview. And he's just an awesome dude, down-to-earth, creative, and just open and honest. And I think you guys will enjoy the interview. So take a listen. Give us a review on iTunes at the end. Make sure to listen to Thrice's new album. It's awesome. There is that. But before we get to that, I want to tell you a little bit about the sponsors that help keep the lights on here. Demented Brewing, okay? Big week in Demented Brewing. They are located in Middlesex, New Jersey, if you've never heard of them. And they are always rotating their taps in their beautiful 16-tap handle room. So they're always pouring something different, always got something new coming out on Sundays. And it's just a great place to visit. Took my dad there the other day, and it was awesome. But a big week in Demented. If you watch Shark Tank, the guys from Physics, which is a machine that helps pour beer, pour Demented's beer on the show, and they actually bought the product and whatnot. So pretty awesome for Demented. Big fans of theirs, and they those guys work hard, and they deserve it. Something home near and dear to me, they make they're now making dog treats from their spent grain and some peanut butter and flour, so you can stop in and feed your dog with Demented beer. Well, not with beer, with the product that made the beer, and then you could have a beer, and you and your dog can have one hell of a time. But that is Demented Brewing. Check them out on Instagram and Twitter and all that fun stuff. Look up Demented Brewing or go to DementedBrewing.com. Now, we are also sponsored by another awesome New Jersey brewery, and that seems to be the theme here. They just keep popping up, and they get better and better. But that is Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, which now has three breweries in walking distance of each other. Manskirt is located in the old bank building. You go there, they always have seasonally inspired ales, okay? They got a lot of things going on, too. They got the Morristown Big Brew Festival. It's at the Armory this Saturday, October 1st. Then they have their anniversary party on the 3rd from 5 to 11, and the Hackettstown Oktoberfest on the 8th. They just brewed a fresh local hop IPA with hops grown that are less than 10 miles from the brewery. And their Oktoberfest drops on Monday. So they got a lot of things. So go over there and see Joe Fisher and his Manskirt. He'll explain it when you see it. But that's manskirtbrewing.com, and check them out on all social media. Wolf Nation. Wolf Nation, our longest sponsors, a new apparel company coming out. What Wolf Nation stands for is Wake Up, Live Free. Basically, breaking the mold of waiting for the man to pay you and you know, doing the 9-to-5 grind and doing your own thing. You know, having a podcast, reaching out to Riley Breckenridge, getting him on, making apparel for men, women, children, okay? Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F. Wake Up, Live Free. Check them out on Twitter, on Instagram. Again, that is W-U-L-F. Nation. Finally, our good friends at Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. They are a trivia company all over New Jersey. I think he has something like 20 accounts. If you want to come see me, I'm at Tap House 15 every Wednesday, play trivia. We're associated with craft breweries. You could be last place and win craft brewery prizes. There's a bonus item on their Instagram every week. So check that out. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right. In about a few minutes, you're going to hear Riley Breckenridge of Thrice. Please enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Riley Breckenridge from Thrice, and you are listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic, which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Boys, welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Mike Berlo, hello again. It's been like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I saw you 2 days ago at a show. Were you a little buzzed that night? You were like, woo! You were like pretty pumped up. Again.
I didn't even know that.
Well,
wow.
It's okay.
That was extra fun.
Well, you said to the bartender, you're like, what's that beer over there? He's like, Brother Thelonious. And you're like, I don't care what it is because I just try and that's how I do. That, and he's like, okay, sir.
That's a Burlew style, yeah.
Mike, welcome back. I am like pumped. I don't know if you could hear it in my voice. I'm amped.
Yeah, we've been off for a while. You know, it's been a little bit of a while. I mean,
a little bit of a while.
Yeah. I mean, we're excited. We're getting the podcast. It's only been about 2 days since some cop killed a black man. So
yeah, only
know.
Two. Only two. So that's called a streak.
Yeah.
That's called a streak. But I got to welcome. We got a third guy on the cast today. Went to college with him. And there's a reason we'll get to in a minute while he's on the cast. And it'll make more sense in a minute. But Steve Sparrow, welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Great to be here. Love it. Love you guys. Mike, good to meet you. Scott, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I don't have it in the voice right now, but I'm going to get pumped real quick.
I'm pumped. I feel good. I feel loose. We got delicious beers going on. But the real reason today, we have a guest that I can only like... He's a member of the band Thrice. Okay, now the average people, these people always every time you say Thrice to people who don't listen, they're like, oh, I've heard of them. But Thrice is one of those bands. There's probably four or five in my life that have kind of been like the soundtrack of my life. It's had different, you know. I guess it would start like I don't even remember if it was late high school or early college, and it's kind of carried me through. And the thing about Thrice is each album is almost completely different, and it's this roller coaster of what are they going to do next, and they broke up for a little while. But Steve, a little background on Steve. We went to college together. We were in some classes together and whatnot, but we always found each other a lot at the same shows, or Devil's Games. It was either Devil's Game or a Coheed show, a Thrice show, or a Killswitch show.
Or at the bar before those shows saying, you're here to go where I'm going after this, right?
Right. So it was like, it was a running joke with my buddy Kevin that, we'll probably run into Steve tonight because I was with him a lot. Like,
Bodner.
We'd be like, we're going to run into Steve probably today. It was you and that guy, Mike DiGiacomo, that we were always at the Devil's Games. But anyway, so Steve shares this with me. He's a humongous Thrice fan, and we've had several conversations over Facebook. They just recently released a new album maybe 2 months ago, something like that. 3 months ago, 4 months ago? Jesus.
From May, yeah.
Jesus.
I know. Summer months fly, man.
I feel like it came out like a month and a half ago. That's how it feels. But I love the album. But anyway, Steve, maybe you could enlighten us a little bit on Thrice in your life. Thrice in your life.
Pretty much the same thing as you, man. The first song I ever heard by Thrice was the first song off their first album, Identity Crisis. I heard it when I was a freshman in high school. I liked punk rock and hardcore and the entire album blew me away and I just loved it. And I just was waiting for that next album to come out, Illusion of Safety. Mm-hmm. And that album changed my life.
I agree.
And since then I have been a massive fan, save for the Island years. I really wasn't. Most Thrice fans, they came in around Artists in the Ambulance or Visu and those are their favorites. Those are two of my least favorites, and I might get in trouble. Riley might hate me for it.
That's okay.
Yeah, you know, that's what it is. I love Major Minor. I love To Be Everywhere is to Be Nowhere. And then the first two, I mean, I think is like the pinnacle of music to me. And it's pretty much like, yeah, I'm the same age that I'm not much younger than them. And it just seems like my life has coincided. And like they've put out the music that I want to listen to every time they release an album. Like, what they think is music at that time matches what I want to hear at that time. And it's just like, you know, it's like that's how they create this like super fan group of people that, like, you know, outside of California, there's just like this hardcore fan group.
Yeah,
and I'm one of them. I, you know,
yeah, it's this ever changing kind of thing, which I always appreciated because I was in numerous bands. I played bass for I don't know 5-6 different bands, and I would say every band was almost completely different. I played in a funk rock kind of band, a heavier kind of band when I was into heavier stuff like breakdowns. And then I played like, there was a point where I was really into like simple songwriting kind of music. And for me, they've touched on all of that too, which is why I've always been a fan. But I don't think I even said, right, we have Riley Breckenridge coming on the show, who is the drummer of Thrice, who is usually the most outgoing member of them too, the one that does the interviews, the one that talks, like, So we'll see in about 13 minutes or so, but pretty pumped.
Barring another bus accident.
Yes. So leading up to this, we've had a bus accident. We had generators or something went out, so they couldn't use their phones. So fingers crossed we'll have him on in a few.
My bet is on locusts today.
there's a big swarm of locusts on the way. Can't make it.
You're going to get an email. Sorry, the guys are in a plague right now. Can we reschedule?
I don't know why we went through Charlotte tonight, but not a good idea.
Seriously. All right, guys. So it is now 6:15, and this is the time I was told to call Riley Breckenridge. So I am pretty excited. Steve, I know you're excited, and Berlew.
I'm here.
Yeah. So let's give Riley Breckenridge.
What's it like being in a band?
Call. You like to play the skins loud. but here is Riley Breckenridge from the band Thrice.
Hello.
Hey, is this Riley Breckenridge from Thrice?
Yes, it is.
Riley, this is Scott Brennan here. I want to welcome you to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. And first and foremost, I want to thank you for coming on.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Sorry we had some scheduling mix-ups. We've had some bad luck with our bus for the past few days.
Yeah, I see. It was cool because I was fact-checking you to see if you guys were lying. I saw the the blown-out tire on Tepe's Instagram. I'm just kidding. But first off, welcome to the show. My good buddy Steve Aspera from College, giant Thrice fan. I welcome him to the show, so he's on.
How you doing, Riley?
Oh, cool.
Massive fan. Yeah.
And then here is my co-host, Mike Berlew, here.
How's it going there, Riley?
Hey, man. How you doing?
All right, so first off, where are you right now? Where are you in the United States?
We are in Minneapolis at First Avenue, the old club that I guess Prince was involved in some regard. And it's across the street from the Target Center and Target Field.
Awesome. So I guess first and foremost, congratulations, not just to you, but you and the band. First off, you released a new album. I asked Steve before, and I was like, oh, it seems like a month and a half. Apparently, it's already been like 4 months, which is I'm a huge fan of the album. And you also became a dad recently, so I got to congratulate both you and the band before we even start here.
Ah, thank you very much. My son's 13 months now. And, the record's been out for 4 months, and it seems like it's been received really well, and we're playing a decent number of new songs live, and they seem to be going over pretty well, so
yeah,
we couldn't really ask for much more.
Here's the thing, Riley. First off, both Steve and I became fans of yours when we were in high school. In fact, the first time I ever remember seeing you was at the Surf and Skate Music Festival in Jersey. And, like, you guys looked like little teenagers. Dustin had, like, spiky hair. And you were playing lots of fast, like, metal-influenced punk songs. And I, like, fell in love there. But you look at the full spectrum of your career. And the songs you guys are putting out, the style now, it's night and day. And I think it's, like, amazing because, as Steve and I were talking, you have somehow found a way to match kind of like the music I'm listening to in my life or the feeling. You guys are always evolving, and that's what's the coolest part about Thrice, I think.
Oh, man. That's really awesome to hear. And I've heard that. I've definitely heard that before. And I think we're all very thankful that people have been willing to evolve with us and kind of accepting of us doing whatever it is that we want to do. Sorry about that. Stephanie's been working on a motorcycle for a week, trying to get it to start, and of course it starts for the first time.
It's beautiful. Right, it's a comedy podcast. It's a comedy podcast. It's like a Stooges segment.
Swear to God, he's been working on that thing for like 5 to 6 hours a day, trying to get it to start with no luck.
Well, congratulations,
of course,
to Tepe.
I'm standing next to him, and he starts it up.
All right, will you be sampling that when you guys come on stage next? The sound of the engine.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Back to what I was saying, like, it's just so cool that people are willing to, like, evolve with us. And, you know, I think they appreciate that the music we're making is inspired and honest, and it's a reflection of where our heads are at collectively. I feel like it'd be really easy to just like settle into the Thrice sound and then try to make record after record after record that sounds like that.
Right.
It wouldn't be an accurate representation of, you know, how our tastes are changing or how we're maturing as humans. And, I think we owe it to our fans just to be as true as possible. And we're just glad that people enjoy what we do.
I mean, like I said, this you made a bold move after Artist in the Ambulance. You did. You made a bold move because you could have made Artist in the Ambulance three times in a row and probably done extremely well. Because that's what audience wanted at the time. And you came out with Viesu, which is arguably my favorite album. Not sure. It goes between my moods. But you guys, you changed. The drums got more slow and powerful. The bass got heavier. The chords got bigger. I think even lyrically, you guys grew amazingly. You took a big risk. And even I remember, like, Viesu came out, like, oh, what the hell is this? And then people, it grew to love it. And that sound you guys made from then on, to me, I think is 10 times better than, you know, the sound that got you there.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I think we're all still really proud of Viesu because that was the first time that we had really kind of like allowed our influences to shine. You know, we had high aspirations, creative aspirations for Artists in the Ambulance, but because of the timeline, the recording and writing timeline, we didn't really get to do everything that we wanted to do with that record.
Really?
So it was a stress. Yeah. So writing and recording that was a very stressful process. And when it came time to do Viesu, we kind of put our foot down, our feet. Wow. English. I'm an English major.
We put our feet down.
Feetses.
Yeah, yeah. put our feet down and we're like, we're going to take as much time as we need to make this. We're going to make it the way we want to make it. We're going to have it sound the way we want it to sound.
Right.
And we're going to let some of these like more obscure influences shine on this record. And you know, part of that was reflected by the producer we chose, a British guy by the name of Steve Osborne, who had never worked with like a heavy band before. So his brain was coming from a totally different place, which helped pull our brain into a different place. And it was a really satisfying creative experience. And I think that record kind of like set a course for us going forward. That
I love it.
We want to do.
I still put it on and it takes me to, like I said, what I love about your guys' music, and I'm not just kissing your ass. I love, like, to me, it's like chapters of, I guess, life or whatever. Like, oh, yeah, so I remember, you know, I was doing this. I was camping in the woods. We were blasting this album when this came out, you know, like now, like,
right.
This latest album came out in a time where I had, I don't know, personally had a lot of turmoil in my life. And I don't know, like, the songs seem to somehow match. Like, there's this big, deep, bass heavy bottom tone in it, and just these lyrics that if you actually think about are like truly poetic. And I think you guys did a hell of a job on this one.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
So like, I wanted to talk to you about the recording process. I know that the recording on this one was a little different, that you guys are all spaced out. You got families, you know, you're coming out of a hiatus here, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the recording on this one, I, from what I read, is you guys were sending a lot of files and whatnot. Was this the hardest album to record? Or, like, what do you feel on that?
Well, the file sharing stuff and sending stuff back and forth, that was more the writing process. Like, when we recorded, we were all in Southern California for, like, 6 or 7 weeks, and it was actually a really, really cool and enjoyable experience in the studio. But as far as the writing process went, it was a little bit more challenging than prior records, because you know, we'd all we were all living in the same cities for previous records. And, like, you know, we get together 3 to 5 days a week and just jam on stuff over and over and over and write as a collective. And this time around, Tepe was living up in Seattle. And, you know, we'd jam as a group around some of the, like, one-offs and festival shows that we were doing. And then, you know, on either side of that, we'd set aside a few days where Tepe could stay in California, and we'd jam on stuff. But instead of jamming on stuff for 3 to 5 days a week for weeks and weeks at a time to write a record, we'd all go home, and people would start working on stuff individually, and kind of there's more writing done on an individual basis. But when it came time to record, we were all together, and it was was really no different than any other time. Just
2-part question on that. You as the drummer, that's to me like I play bass. I played bass for years. To me, like that's got to drive me mad. The file sharing, because drums and drums and bass are so in the that backbone, the loudness of it. To me, I never loved playing bass in headphones. I can't imagine. I don't know. Do you love playing like making drum tracks at home, or like I feel like. I don't know. It's got to be so hard. And the second part, would Thrice be around if you weren't able to file share, if that technology was not around right today?
Oh, man. it would have taken us a hell of a lot longer to write the record, that's for sure. I don't know. I mean, I'm not opposed to, like, programming drums because I didn't have the means to go in and record for every demo revision that we did in order to have the budget for it. So for the demos, I was just programming stuff. And that was frustrating
because it
was time-consuming. And, you know, you hear something in your head or you play it when you're in a rehearsal space, and then you go back and you're trying to place these notes into a grid for the program. And it's not sounding or feeling the way you want it to, but... after a while, I kind of got to a point where I was like, okay, these are just super, super rough roadmaps. Like, not everything has on these demos has to be note perfect. Just like figure something out and then shed over the top of it so that you have your stuff together when we get in the studio. And, you know, you can try things in the studio. And that's what ended up happening. One of the positive aspects of starting with programming stuff was you can program stuff that you can't exactly play. So like I'd hear something in my head, but I wouldn't really know how to play it, and then I'd program it and I'd be like, oh, now I can see it in this grid, now I can go shed it and figure it out and figure out how to play it. So it had its pros and cons, but and also like Ed and I are local in Southern California, and we've been sharing a rehearsal space. We're sharing a rehearsal space during the hiatus. So there were times where we'd get together and just do like a rhythm section jam to kind of regain some of that old writing vibe. But
every time I used to
we made it work.
Every time I used to do a rhythm section jam, it would always start out like kind of cool, and then it would always turn into like a funk like session of me like slapping bass and like that's all. It would always be like a Parliament cover band that day. But go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, always devolves into something weird. Yeah, with Ed, it's like it never collapses and falls into a funk hole. It's like Ed has like a very bizarre creative brain. It's an amazing brain, but like he'll come up with some part, and I'm like, where the hell is the one on that part? Like, I don't even know, where does this part start and where does it end? And is that in like, is that in 9 or is it in 5 or is it just straight 4, but you're starting on something else? So that's usually the way it goes. But we have a lot of fun jamming together.
Hey, Raj, Steve. So to touch on the file sharing, while you guys were on hiatus, your other band, Puig Destroyer, that was entirely file sharing. So did that, like, help you with the Thrice record, or did that, like, you had experience with writing and, I guess, programming the drums, too, so you were probably primed
definitely.
For it, right?
I mean, it helped me become familiar with programming stuff and I can't imagine how slow I would have been at it if I hadn't done the Plague Destroyer stuff before. But and the file sharing stuff was, yeah, that was 100% of the Plague Destroyer stuff was file sharing because we had never even been in the same room together. Yeah, it made it easier, but also like the Plague Destroyer project is 100% a joke band. And we didn't take it seriously, and the whole ethos behind writing that stuff was like, first idea, best idea, don't overthink it, don't spend more than like 15 or 20 minutes on this part, just poop out the most absurd stuff you can poop out, and we'll just put it out. If people like it, they like it, and if they don't like it, then who cares? Like, it's costing us $0 to make. But with Thrice, there's, you know, there's pressure of coming back from a hiatus and, you know, 15, 16 years of band history that you don't want to ruin by blowing it. So, yeah.
It's just funny because I'm a massive Thrice fan, and I always notice when someone has a Thrice shirt on. But lately, I have seen so many Puig Destroyer shirts in person, and I'm always like, "Hey, nice shirt!" It's ridiculous because people love Puig, I guess the baseball player. It's funny they all have that same shirt, and I'm like, "Damn, that band made an impact." Oh, you guys never even jammed together.
No, we were blown away by the response to that because it was totally a joke. It was a joke. That me and Ian Miller from Kowloon Walled City, we do a baseball podcast together. Yep. And it was a joke we made on that podcast. It's like, oh, you know, we both like Pig Destroyer, and Yasiel Puig is like the most popular player in baseball at the time. And we're like, oh, somebody should make some jokey, like, baseball team grindcore band called Plague Destroyer.
And why like, not us?
Yeah. And then Ian emailed me like after we finished recording that podcast, was like, we should do that. Like, oh man, I don't know. And then he started sending me bass tracks, and I got inspired and started programming stuff to those, and then just programming drum tracks to send to him to play bass over. And we had an EP done in like a week, I think, and then
I feel like all of a sudden
like
I just saw
all over
it.
The internet.
It was just there, like all it was just there all of a sudden. Like it was like, okay, Puig Destroyer.
Yep.
But
it got in Yasiel's head, and then he got sent down to AAA.
Yeah, you guys succeeded. Yeah. Yeah. You succeeded. He's
I think I heard it from Vince Scully that Thrice is the reason why Yasiel Puig got sent down to AAA. Explain yourself.
We accept 100% responsibility for his failing.
First off, Riley is a diehard Angels fan, so he's probably happy about the effect on Puig. But maybe we'll get to baseball in a minute. But I want to you went on hiatus. We always knew you were coming. Dustin made it clear you guys were coming back. What did you do during your hiatus time? I know I read an interview with you. You said one day you were at a concert and he was at a concert and you got a text like, "Hey, we got to jam again," or something like that, or "We got to make music again."
Uh-huh.
But was it during that time? Were you lost a little bit? What did you do to occupy your time? Were you making music? Were you trying something else? Trying something new? What were you doing?
I did a lot of different crap. I think I was just trying to find something that would pay the bills and not drive me completely insane. So
Tepe's making leather. What?
Yeah,
love that.
No,
I love that.
A lot. Like I worked as a drum tech for Jimmy Eat World and Weezer for a while.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Worked as a sales rep for like a high-end suit company, which was totally out of character and a huge mistake. I did that for like a year and almost lost my mind. I worked for an athletic apparel startup that ended up folding like in the middle of Thrice writing the record. I was just jumping all over the place. I wasn't really sure what to do. And, you know, you kind of always have in the back of your mind, like, this could all go away tomorrow.
Right.
But you don't really think, like, what am I actually going to do with myself? So I was glad when I got a text from Dustin saying we're going to do this.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, the Sporting Goods store folded after they sold all those Josh Hamilton jerseys.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, God. Yeah. Don't remind me of that.
I mean, that hiatus, like for fans, it was upsetting. Like, I always knew you'd come back. And, like, certain bands don't put out an album in that much time, too. So it was like, when you guys were like, we're coming back, I'm like, yes. They're back. It was fulfilling. But, like,
look at Brand New.
Yeah.
They haven't put a record out in 7 years.
That's true. That's true.
Thursday.
Yeah. Thursday. God, yeah, Thursday. But I had a couple other questions for you. Like, when it comes to, like, you are privileged enough to play music for a living, which is amazing. You get to play with your brother for a living. That's got to be amazing too. Do you ever are you able to sit back and be like, you know, every night that you're doing either a small room or a big room and this crowd singing your music, are you able to sit back and just say, oh my God, like this, like, I don't know. Does it ever get old? Do you ever forget about that? Or is it like every night, like, wow, you know, like, there's either 1,000 people, 2,000 people, whatever it is, 3,000, you know, more than that, like chanting your songs, and there's weird podcasts from New Jersey reaching out to you to talk to you, you know, like, does it ever get old?
Or no, it's never lost on me, and I think I appreciate it even more after the hiatus. Because I know what it feels like to not have it around, and I know how much I missed it. And so even if there are days where it's like, oh, I slept like shit, or I'm sick, or like I miss my wife and kid, or, you know, oh man, you know, this venue is like half full and the show's not doing very well. Like, there's never a time where any of that, outweighs like the gratitude I have to be able to do this. And since we've come back, there have been multiple times on stage where we'll be in the middle of a set and I'll just be like, holy crap, this is insane. So cool, and I'm so lucky to be able to do it, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to do it. None of that is lost on me. It's the old thing. You never know what you've got until it's gone, or if you love something, let it free, or I don't know.
Right.
One of those things. But like,
it came back.
Yeah, I think it would be impossible to not be more grateful, just because it went away and it sucked and I missed it a lot.
Yeah.
Now that it's back, it's just. So
I mean,
cool.
It's got to be so cool just to look in front of you and your brother's jamming out in front of you, you know, like singing back up on The Earth Will Shake, you know, like with that dirty Gibson grabber that, I don't know, gets me going. It's actually because of you guys, I will admit it, because of you guys that I've been trying to get a Gibson grabber for quite a while now. But they're always
cool.
It's got that natural growl, man, and just, I don't know. It's got to be so cool to see your brother right in front of you, man.
Oh, it's amazing.
Unless you hate your brother like Oasis, then.
No. I love him, and I'm super thankful that I get to share this with him. And we'll have several moments out on a tour where he'll walk back to the riser during a show and just be like, "This is crazy," and I'll smile, and he'll smile, and it's so fun.
That's so amazing, man. So when you are you're a new father, when you're away from your family and you guys are on the road, how do you keep that focus? That that technology has definitely made it. At least you could see your children and talk to them. But how do you keep your focus and keep your mind right during that whole time?
I mean, I realize that I'm out here to do a job. A lot of people don't think it's like a job, because they're like, oh yeah, you just party and play a show. And it's like, no, that's not the way we do it. But yeah, I'm thankful to be able to do this. It's a way for me to provide for my family. My wife is super supportive and understands that while, yes, it's super hard for her to handle the kid by herself, that, you know, I'm out providing for us. So it's a sacrifice that we all have to make. So, and Dustin's got three kids and Pepe's got three kids, and I saw them go through this.
You guys just have a bus full of FaceTime.
Yeah. But they were going through this. They were going through this 9 years ago when they had their first kid. And,
right.
And they, you know, they would tell me how hard it was. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, I bet it is hard. But I never understood how difficult it can be. I mean, I miss the shit out of my kid and I miss the crap out of my wife. But yeah, FaceTime, I'm texting with them constantly. And it's still hard as hell to be away. But I'm lucky to be able to do this, and I'm not going to lose sight of that. And it find me another job where you can be gone for 3 weeks and then come home for 2 months and have basically nothing to do except hang out with your kid. And
that's true. That is a way to look at it. That's true.
Yeah, there are pluses and minuses. I mean, I could be working. I was working like an 8 to 7 job 5 days a week and working sometimes on weekends. You barely see your kid anyway.
No.
If that were the situation, I'd see my kid for like an hour a day. And that would suck.
Yeah.
I would hate that. So I'll take this for sure.
I was reading in Drum Magazine, and they were talking about how you have like this small padded room and you'll just be practicing for like hours upon hours. How do you get into that concentration mode where it's enjoyable and it's productive to just get into that little zone?
It's different than the padded room you're usually in, but
Yeah.
Do you poop in the corn like I do?
Yeah. That was actually a long time ago. I was we built a studio in a detached garage at a house that they owned. This was like around the recording of the Alchemy Index and Beggars.
Ah, yes.
So like 2006 to 2009-ish, I want to say. But then Tepe and his family moved to a different house, and I started renting that house from Tepe. So I had that studio at my disposal, and I just had my drums set up in there. And, you know, it was literally a 30-foot walk from my kitchen to where my drums were. So when it's that easy, it's just like, man, I'm going to go shed for hours and hours and hours.
That's
and hours.
Awesome,
and, it was awesome. Things have definitely changed now. I mean, we have a rehearsal space back home that I can drive to, and it's like a 20-minute drive. But I've also got a wife and kid at home, so
it's not above your, son.
You don't play with the baby in arm.
It's not above your son's bedroom.
I don't have as much free time as I used to have. But,
white barges in the kid's trying to sleep.
Yeah, no, my wife's pretty good about letting me get out of the house a few days a week to go down and just work on stuff, whether it's prepping for tour or writing new stuff or playing along to some tracks that I like. It's a pretty good situation.
All right, I hate to be greedy because you guys just put an album 4 months ago, but I did call the hiatus in a blog post before you announced it, so I feel like I deserve to ask this question. You're on tour now. It ends in like a month or two. What's 2017 got for us?
More touring. We don't have anything like written in stone at the moment, but talking about going back over to Europe again, talking about trying to get to Australia. And then also talking about going to do the U.S. one or two more times. And then in between all that, we've already started talking about, like, what we want to do with the next record. And people are writing individually, which is kind of how we do it. Like, everybody goes off into their own little cave and writes pieces of music that they think will work well. And then once we're done, we may start before we're done touring on this record. But once we're done touring on this record, we'll really bear down and everybody will share those parts that they've come up with. And then we'll just kind of piece songs together the way we always have.
That was the correct answer.
Oh. Yeah, nice, nice. Good, good. I would, if I were to guess, I would say the goal is to probably have a record out late spring or summer of 2018.
Awesome, like man. Rough, all right.
The rough schedule.
Riley, I could talk to you all freaking night. I just want to do, I really could. And first, before we even get to anything to close this with, I just want to say thank you. And I want to give a shout out to Natalie, who I've dealt with for the last week. She has been so good about updating me and updating us on what's going on. And, you know, she made me feel like I wasn't bothering her. So I would love to give her a little plug there. Natalie, you are awesome and you made this happen. So, but I want to thank you for coming on. I want to finish with a segment I call Rapid Fire with Riley. I just want you to tell me the first thing that comes to your mind when I ask these questions.
Okay.
All right. Favorite all-time drummer?
John Bonham.
Yes. Okay. Favorite band to tour with?
Oh, Brand New.
Band you'd love to tour with but haven't yet?
That list is long. The first one that comes to mind, the Jimmy Eat World.
Yeah, I would love to watch that, man.
You guys would be headlining, right?
Favorite city to play? Favorite city to play?
Ooh.
Is it the hometown or is it some obscure kind of place?
Starland Ballroom,
New Jersey.
As much as I love hometown shows because the crowds are like the biggest and the craziest. Dealing with like family and friends and last minute guest list requests and all that stuff for a hometown show is like it makes it so hard to focus on what you're actually there to do, which is play a show.
That's true.
Okay. So I wouldn't say home.
Wow, I like it.
I love Chicago. I love Austin.
Nice.
I would like New York, but you can't park a bus in New York.
But you know where you can park it? New Jersey at the Starland Ballroom, baby.
Yes. Starland's rad. I like that.
Well, you don't have to pick one. Okay. Song you'll never get sick of playing.
The Earth Will Shake.
You just melted my heart because that's my favorite Thrice song.
I was going to guess Rock Lobster.
Actually one of my least favorite songs in the history of Thrice.
One song you are somewhat sick of playing.
Deadbolt.
I could answer that for you, I think.
Yeah, of course. Favorite 80s band.
Oh, man. Favorite 80s band. I don't listen to a lot of stuff from the 80s. And when I did listen to stuff in the 80s, it was like hip-hop and R&B.
Well, hip-hop's good. So, there was good hip-hop then.
Eric B. and Rakim.
Rakim's awesome. This is rapid fire, so you could do whatever. You can say whatever you want. No one's thinking of two. What band member sleeps the most on tour?
Dustin.
Best Anaheim Angel of all time, your opinion?
The best or my favorite?
Both.
You now gave yourself two questions.
Okay. The best is already Mike Trout.
That's true. Absolutely true.
Jersey boy.
And I guess my favorite is Mike Trout.
Yes.
That is a freaking beast. Imagine being that good at anything.
I already am podcasting.
Yeah. No, but I mean,
I'm serious. I know.
Imagine being like 25 years old or what is he? 24 maybe?
Yeah, I was going to say if that.
And like, and legitimately knowing that you are the best person on earth at something that's super fucking hard, It's really hard to be good at baseball. And he's the best on earth, and it's really there's really no debate.
I know. He's unbelievable. I'm a big Mets fan, so I'm pretty pumped about last night's win, not going to lie. Still coming off of that one.
That kind of hurt.
But, all right.
Yeah. If you get, all your pitchers are falling apart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Syndergaard's not pitching now, too. So that means every starter from opening day, besides my man, Bartolo Colon, who is the best pitcher in baseball, because he's invincible.
Bartolo, the world will be nothing of cockroaches and Bartolo Colon pitching to them.
If you go back in history, like those old grainy black and white baseball films, if you look hard enough, it's Bartolo throwing fastballs.
He's in there.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is a national treasure.
I love him. I can't wait till he's the fifth face on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
All right.
It's going to be a big face.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a big rock. If you could open for any current band, who would you want to open for?
Radiohead.
Absolutely. Nice. Guilty pleasure band.
Ooh. Not really guilty. Because I like what I like, and not everybody has to like it. But
exactly.
my wife kind of leans, her musical taste leans a bit more pop. So she got me hooked on that Bieber stuff that he did with Skrillex and Diplo. And
not bad, right? Not bad.
I mean,
you know what?
I had to
admit on a recent show that "Rain" by Madonna was my favorite song when I was in fifth grade. So, your choice was my. I know.
Bold.
I know. Bold. Exactly. Bold. Mm. When you're on the podcast, though, you're open and honest. All right, yeah. Three more. Current bands you're listening to. Current something that we should all listen to right now. Put it. I would love to, like, in the old days, I would say CD in your player, but we don't do that anymore. So, current band you're listening to.
Listening to a lot right now. I feel like I should give some props to one of my favorite bands called Kowloon-Walled City.
Awesome.
And my friend Ian, who does the baseball podcast with me, and who I did Puig Destroyer with, and who I'm doing this other side project, Less Art, with, plays bass in that band. But they're
awesome.
They're really, really good. But I've been recently listening to that new Every Time I Die, new Neurosis.
He called it.
Touche Amore.
Yeah.
I called Every Time I Die album. I said, we got to ask him about it, because I just listened to it too, and it's unreal.
It's a fucking banger, dude. I don't know how those dudes stay as pissed as they are.
I don't think Andy Williams
is
human.
I'm too old to be that furious. It's amazing. I'm a huge fan of those dudes.
Okay. Is there a Thrice song you still don't know the lyrics to?
Fuck most of them. I'm a drummer, man.
Well, that, when I played bass, unless it was the songs I was like quote unquote singing, I'm like, I don't know what that guy's saying. You know, I like it, sure.
Yeah.
All right. If you were
I don't even think I don't even know if I could quote one song front to back. Like,
I love that. I love that. Seneca, you play them every night.
You probably quote like Seneca or something front to back.
Yeah.
I know you're a big beer guy. What's the best beer you've ever had?
Heady Topper.
Yeah, that's a good one. Solid.
Yeah, you can only get it in Vermont. And
the Alchemist.
That sucks, but it's cool. Yeah.
Last two. If you weren't a musician, what would you be doing right now?
Oh, man. Wasn't a musician.
If you weren't a musician.
If I weren't a musician. I don't know. When I was in college, before I made a bad decision to switch majors, I was in TV and radio.
Me too. That's what I majored in.
Some of it was production, but some of it was behind the mic or in front of the camera stuff. And I always wanted to do that when I was younger and never followed through. I majored in it for 2 years. Pepperdine, and then I transferred to a different school, and they didn't have that specific major, but I was at that school because I wanted to play baseball, so I was just like, fuck it, I'll just choose whatever major, and the guidance counselor was like, oh, you've gotten all A's in English, like, through high school, and you know, your first 2 years at Pepperdine, why don't you go for an English degree? And I was like, okay.
Sound like an English major.
That degree, what do you do? What do you do with that degree?
I don't know. I went for TV production, and now I'm an elementary school teacher and a stand-up comedian. So figure that one out.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, he's barely like, the second one.
Oh, so. You got an English degree. Are you going to teach? I'm like, eh. I don't know if I want to teach.
Riley, last question from us.
I can read the hell out of a book, though.
I could read that thing, man.
Yeah.
Last question, Riley.
Let me read a book.
Your favorite podcast.
Verbal Shenanigans.
He got it right, too.
He dropped the mic. Damn it.
That was the one I was going to have him close with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask him, according to famousbirthdays.com, you're the number 14 drummer of 41 years of age. Discuss.
Ooh. Whoa, that's a thing?
Apparently.
You're at least 13, so don't even fret it.
What is your favorite podcast? Can you give a podcast you listen to, or do you listen to podcasts?
Yeah, I listen to a ton. Yeah, most of them are baseball related.
Yep. How about your podcast?
I really enjoy song on the music side. I really like Song Exploder. But there is a podcast that is called the $600 Podcast that is Justin Halpern, the guy who wrote Shit My Dad Says.
Oh, yeah.
And a comedian named Tommy Jonigan and a comedy writer named Patrick Schumacher. And they're all, like, kind of my age, and they all have kids that are, like, anywhere from 5 to 1 year old. And it's a lot. They talk about parenting, and they talk about how tough it is taking care of kids. They talk about creative life, and it just resonates with me on so many different levels right now. And it's so funny. Like, these dudes are hilarious. So I really enjoy that podcast. And they're short, digestible episodes, like 35, 45 minutes. So it's really cool for all the new dads out there.
That's awesome. Riley, I don't want to take up any. You already gave us more time than I thought you would, or where you were allotted.
No.
But it was
no problem.
It's such a pleasure to talk to you. And like I said before, when I was talking about, like, you know, with technology, like maybe it did keep Thrice together, and all this little, like, technology, like you know, email and this and that, I was able to somehow find you guys, which is you know, like. It's amazing, and sometimes it feels like a reward. And I'm so glad I got to talk to you, and I think so is Steve, so is Mike. But I really want to thank you for coming on the podcast, sharing a couple minutes with us. And, you know, like, I wish the best for your band, and we'll be there at the next Jersey show. And I would love to have you on again in the future.
Yeah, and if you come to Jersey, if you come to Jersey, I will make sure you drink beer as good, if not better, than Hetty Topper, for sure.
He'll also be the loser chanting "Torch to end all torches" in the front row.
What are the odds? At least I don't scream "Deadbolt."
Yeah,
I yell at the people who do scream "Deadbolt." What are the odds we ever get "Torch to end all torches" live again? Ever? Maybe. It's so good.
I'll never say never.
Riley, you don't have to humor him.
No, I know.
He's wearing an aqua colored shirt. Don't humor him. He's humoring himself.
Oh wow.
Riley, thank you
so
much.
Summer's over, bud.
It was 90 today.
There's technically one more day left. Technically.
Riley, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. You you made a lifelong Thrice fan happy. So
awesome, man. Thank you. Thank you guys so much. It was awesome talking to you guys, and I'll see you guys in Jersey.
Yep. Thanks, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Riley Breckenridge. How awesome was that, Steve?
Better than expected. Bucket list type stuff right there. Yep. I could literally pick his brain all day and never get tired of it, but I just got to thank him and thank you for letting me be here. So thanks, Riley. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Verbal Shenanigans.
Anytime,
thanks,
man.
Thrice.
Thanks, Thrice. You know what? I did touch on a point at the end there, and it's true. Like, because of social media, all the shit that's terrible with it, even look at today. Okay, look at today. Like, Let's be honest, I probably wouldn't have connected with you if there wasn't a Facebook again.
Right, yeah.
We probably would have been like college buddies that drank a few beers and saw each other at a Thrice show, and that would be it, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I've been kind of sending you some stuff that I was doing, you know, but we've kept in contact for a while. I brought you on for the – but, again, I've been emailing – I have been emailing Thrice's people for – it has to be a year and a half. And it was just a casual email. It wasn't pushy. Hey, I would love to interview a member of the band if they have 10 minutes. And they had a – what really sucked is their PR person that I was talking to for a year got, like, left or did something else. So it really, like, I was like, oh, well, there goes that chance.
Yeah, your one connect.
And then the one that came in could not have been better. She's texting me like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry for, like – I have no leverage here. Like, I'm like
– yeah.
So sorry. Like, oh, like, I'm sorry you that I'm bothering
you.
Yeah. But it's like it is some amazing stuff. And, like, me and Mike have talked – I've done, like – I told you that I think I've done over 100 interviews now, and every time there's something that amazes me about someone's story or their passion, and that's what's cool about doing this. Like, people be like, "Oh, you're posting about your podcast." I'm like, "You don't have to read it. Yeah, you don't have to read it." But that's the only way I know how to put it out there. You know, like, I have talked to people I would never imagine meeting. We have done so much stuff between the festivals and the. You know, the people we've talked to, the NASCAR thing, we're riding water slides with NASCAR drivers, like, all because of this little thing we've done, we started.
He was shocked by that statement.
Did the water slides only go left?
Yeah. Hey, they go right twice a year. Don't be mocking my NASCAR that way.
Yeah. But it's like, I used to do it in front of my computer with no mic, with just a recorder on, some stupid thing. I'd be ranting and think I'm, like, funny enough to – and it turned into, like, it's not really about being funny. To me, the episodes now are the people, and I just take a step back and want to hear the answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing. It is amazing. I don't want to go too long on that, but sometimes I take a step back and go, hey, this is why I do this.
You handled the interview pretty well, like, almost masterfully. You kept it going. He talked. His answers were a good length. You kind of gave him his props, but also stepped back a little bit. I know if I was in your position, I was fighting the urge to get very fanboy. At the end, I mentioned the Torch Channel torture just because I don't know if I would have forgiven myself if I didn't. But no, it went better than expected.
The whole Colin Kaepernick thing. I want to talk to you guys about it a little bit. Obviously, it's everywhere you look now. In fact, it's like people are tuning in to see the national anthem, which is interesting. You know, like, that's usually the point where everyone's getting their snacks together and, you know, time to sit down. But people are tuning in, and on ESPN, even today, like, I turned it on this morning, and it was like, they're showing, like, what guys from what team stood up and whatnot. And I just wanted to get your viewpoints on and talk a little bit. We don't have a lot of time. We can always go back into it later, but... Colin Kaepernick, as everyone knows, kneeled during the national anthem. It's definitely spread quickly. It's gotten the coverage that I'm sure, you know, I don't. Who knows if he even expected that much coverage to come from his one preseason kneeling during the national anthem thing. But, you know, your first reaction is kind of like, angry, like, oh, America, you know, like, but then you think, you take the time to think for 2 seconds, okay, you think for 2 seconds, in my opinion, you think for 2 seconds, and you go, hey, you know, you always complain that either celebrities or sports stars don't stand up for whether they're political or socioeconomic issues or societal issues, and here's a guy, say what you want to say about him, has brought up now almost every day on ESPN for 3 weeks, and the news and stuff like that, has brought up the unfortunate event of what the media shows us every day of another black person being shot. So I don't know where you guys feel on that. I don't know who wants to speak first.
Well, I defer to the guest host.
All right. Well,
first, I guess I would be the guest. Yeah. You're the co. I'm the guest.
Well, wait a minute. Scott.
I'm the co-host.
Yeah. there's only one. Seat. Well, I mean, I never had the anger part about it. I mean, I understand the patriotism thing, but it's one of those kind of things. Like, even all the people who get outraged about it, I kind of sit back and go, let's look at it from this standpoint. Like, all the times you go to a bowl game or whatever, they're like, please stand for the national anthem. How many times do you just do it just because... You just do it. You just raise,
right.
You put your hand on your heart, take off your cap, and blah, blah, blah. I mean,
take
how
off
many?
Your Kaepernick. Oh!
Oh, I like how you did that.
Sorry. I'll be here all night.
I just don't get the whole, oh, that hurt me so much in the military and blah, 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 where 90% of the time you couldn't even, like, tell me who sung the national anthem, who did this, who do that. I mean, the way I look at it, the most outrage I got from a national anthem was the time Roseanne Barr did the national anthem in San Diego. And
Carlos.
Yeah, I mean, she totally just, like, mocked it, and then she grabbed her crotch. That is something where you can sit back and go, whoa, whoa, whoa. There's something a little bit sacred. There's nothing behind what you did other than to try to get a joke. What the hell are you doing? I mean, I could go back to high school where I remember in first period where we were doing the Pledge of Allegiance, there was some kid by me, and once in a while he wouldn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. And I remember a substitute teacher saw that, and she got, like, really upset. She's like, go to the principal's office. And it was kind of like one of those things. Everybody's looking around, well, what's the big deal, for lack of a better term? I understand the teaching of patriotism and telling people, well, this is what you really should do to respect it. But to go so far as to say, well, that really hurt everything, yeah, and this is a big deal, and we got to get you in trouble for it. Like the death threats, apparently, yeah, that he says he's getting, that's just so stupid.
Here's the thing, too, that, like I said, when you take a step back and you realize that, you know, America is not perfect for everybody, okay? I am a white man. I don't know the fear of being shook down for walking down the street, okay? And I have a lot of black guys that I've talked to who have been pulled over, who've been walking down the middle of the street, hey, you know, face the wall, let me pat your pocket, stuff like that. I don't know that fear. I'm not living in an area, okay, that might be poor. And the one media stream that's coming in every single day is a picture of another black man who's been killed. Okay. Now, is that the media's fault? Of course, because they're not going to show everyone so that we all work together. They want two sides, because when it's two sides, it becomes a football game where you can cheer for one side and everyone can argue and protest, where nothing should be looked at in one direction. You know, it should be, hey, there's this, there's good cops, there's bad cops, there's people that were pointing guns at police or whatever. But I could probably speak for all three of us here. We don't know the fear of cops that was brought up with us from the time we were 3 years old in our communities, you know, where the cops aren't your friends. They're not the local officers that pull you over for a speeding ticket. They're the ones that shot your uncle or your friend or your classmate, you know? So I hate the excuse that, hey, he's being paid millions of dollars. He's not allowed to say it. So when does getting paid mean that you have no more opinion? Hey, you're making money, so you should just be a pawn? Isn't that what we were fighting against to begin with?
And how else is he supposed to protest?
Right.
That a football game is the only thing that he has. Like that, not that's his own, that's his contribution to society. He's a football player. He gets paid a lot of money for it, even if he's a backup. Like, you know, everyone's upset with protests because they turn into riots, and rightfully so. You shouldn't riot. You should protest. But no one likes protests because they get in the way of traffic, or like there's all these rules on how you protest. And Colin Kaepernick sat down during the national anthem of a preseason game.
Right.
Like, that's what that's him using his position to do what he can. I have a lot of friends who are cops, a lot, and I pick their brain a lot. Every time I hang out with them, I ask them about something. What do you think about this? Tell me about the guy in St. Louis. Tell me about, what do you think about Tulsa? Like, I bring this stuff up all the time. I want to pick their brain. They don't have an easy job.
Nope.
But I'm of the opinion that there needs to be way better training, because, you know, I'm tired of seeing the videos. I know cops are tired of seeing the videos. And every time one comes out, they just, like, protect the cop. And I, okay, like, yes, we get it. We get it, okay? Your job is hard. You deal with the scum of society most of the time. But you know what? It can't always be, if you're in danger, you shoot. You did, like, you weren't drafted to be a cop. You signed up for that job. Everyone signed up for that job. You knew it was going to be a little dangerous.
Yeah.
And if you can't handle the, you know, I don't know. It's a double-edged sword. I have friends with cops, and I don't want any of them to ever use their gun. I hope they all survive and retire and have
come
a great
home at
life.
Night, you know?
Yeah, so their families, like, it scares me. Some of my really good friends.
I got a brother-in-law, a cousin, my best friend, three or four people that are cops.
Right, but you need the right temperament.
No. And the way they talk, is, you know, it's just like any job where one bad something spoils the batch. For instance, where I work, a man just got put behind bars for molesting children, okay? Yeah, now, that puts, you know, all these comments like, where were they? Where were they? Okay, whatever. Okay, but in this case, well, that case is pretty extreme too, but in a case of a cop, their mistakes are lives lost, not Steve, you didn't feel you dealt with a customer terrible. We lost an account. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You dealt with a person wrong and you lost a dad. You lost a brother. And it's always, as soon as it happens, we bring up their police record.
Yes. Oh, that bothers you me, know? So much.
You know, it doesn't matter. Every scenario is individual, you know? So you see that one with that autistic guy that was probably that, and the one in the driver's side where the guy got shot like 6 times point blank was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. And I honestly feel people get all patriotic and scared because it's racist, man. They're afraid of black people stating their opinions and making a point. Martin Luther King and all that fought for peaceful protests, and now they're doing it, and it's right on TV, and it's scary to them. I don't know. The more I salute Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, well, I mean, to your point about the cops being racist, I will sit back and say I don't think the cops are like.
I'm not saying the cops. I'm saying the people who are going crazy about supporting the blue and the truth. Like, he's not. Colin Kaepernick is not saying every cop is an asshole murderer. He's saying that there's a lot of black people being shot right now, whether or not that's like what the media is showing. But can we change it? You know.
And that's kind of my thing. I mean, a lot of people want to push on the cops are racist cops. My theory is I don't think they're fundamentally racist, but I think they go into a situation, whether they're in certain areas or whatever, and the first assumption is, oh, I don't know, I better get my guard up and stuff like that, instead of going, okay, this is an individual situation, kind of like the most recent one where the guy's car got stalled in the middle of the road, and like there's 4 cops there. The 2 of them have tasers, and there's one with a gun open, and she's like, oh.
She just got charged with manslaughter.
Yeah, I mean, and I applaud that. I mean, I mean, that's one thing I will say. Like, one guy will bring up Eric Potts. If anybody goes on Facebook, he does certain videos. He's a ex-cop. He works for NJ101.5, and he's a really interesting guy to listen to. He's really supportive of the cops, and I'll even give him credit. Like, when he looked at me, he's like, I'm going to be straight honest with you. That was a bad shot. That was a pure... I can't explain every single scenario, but, like, from all the angles and video, that was a bad shot, and she deserved what she got. So
I agree.
Yeah. I hate the... You touched on the criminal record thing before, and it just... The total lack of respect or lack of caring for human life is getting... Like, someone died. Every time something like this happens, someone died. I don't care if they were selling cigarettes or they made a motion to their waist. Or like, you know what? There are very few things in this world that are worth death.
Yep.
Okay? And this is the punishment that they're getting. And it's sad. It's so sad that, you know, it's in my opinion, there's no police training to de-escalate any situations. It's always escalate, and then it's a good kill.
Yeah.
There should be no kills that are bad kills just because, you know, you're dealing with people's lives. These are citizens. You're sworn to protect them. Like, I hate when they bring up, automatically they bring up the criminal record immediately. And that bothers me so much because, you know what? He's on the street. He earned a second chance. He might not be doing something wrong right now, okay? And for you just say, you're going into it, all right, well, he was arrested for a gun a couple years ago, so he's probably armed. He's probably dangerous, and I'm just going to be extra cautious. And I understand, you know, this is not like, you know, I have friends. I have to like repeat myself every other sentence. I'm not anti-police. I get it. But there has to be better training in the police academy because it's a 6-month program and then you're out. And I've talked to some police forces in some not good areas and they kind of take anybody.
Steve, you are going to be the victim of a segment we called Move On or Carry On. Okay?
Okay.
So what I did it with Berlo one time, 6 months ago, probably more than that.
At least,
hockey season.
Okay. Now you're getting married, Steve. Congratulations.
Thank you. My fiance will recognize that as my clap because it's
like, yay.
That's my clap. That's my
why clap. Are you giving a thumbs down, bro? I don't understand.
Because I'm
you
4 weeks
a
away.
Slut throat.
Because I'm 4 weeks away and I'm broke.
Now, Steve, these are going to be 4 scenarios. Okay. Now, the scenarios are you and your fiance.
Okay.
If this happens, would you move on or just carry on?
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read them to you. And instead of saying yes or no, I would like to know your thought process. Like, elaborate.
Of course, of course.
You know, it is radio. It's not TV.
I have.
So are you ready to play move on or carry on?
Sure. As okay. long as I get final cut of this episode.
No,
go ahead. It's, anything I say here, I would say to my fiance. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Here we go. So here is Verbal Shenanigans' second time ever, move on or carry on.
That was anticlimactic.
Yeah. I was about to say, is there a theme song in here?
Or? Maybe.
You want to be with her long? Do you move on or carry on? Someone here. There we go. Now I can barely hear it. That was a good setup.
There we go. All right, Steven Spare, get ready to play. Move on. Or carry on. All right, so Steve, all you have to say is if you would move on or carry on, okay? So here is the first scenario. It's called Uncle Julio. Uncle Julio. See, scenario one, Uncle Julio. Ready?
Okay.
All right, your fiance and you are excited for the big day. It's approaching. Your wife says, "Sweetheart, I'm so excited. My Uncle Julio and his family want to meet you and celebrate our engagement." Okay, you with us?
Yeah.
You say to yourself, "Uncle Julio? I never once heard of this Uncle Julio." But as a good, as a good soon-to-be husband, you oblige. Mm-hmm. Okay. After a few hours driving, you arrive at a strange house. Uncle Julio walks out. He's about 4'8", reeks of cigars, and wields three top teeth. Your fiance runs to embrace him. He picks her up by her posterior and open-mouth kisses her for what seems like 2 minutes. You stare in amazement. He shakes your hand and says, "Congratulations, son. She's a great girl." He turns to your fiance and says, "I can't wait to give you your wedding gift." Do you move on or carry on?
This is like right now, like a month before the wedding. There's an uncle that makes out with. I'm asking, is there an uncle that makes out with my fiance a month before my wedding?
Yep.
Like full-on make out, ass grab.
Ass grab, saying like, "I can't wait to give you your wedding gift."
That's a move on.
Move on!
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean,
all right.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to have to agree with them on that one.
Yeah.
You guys can both talk about your thinking.
She knows. I wouldn't expect her to be cool with me kissing an aunt.
Yeah.
So I'm not cool with her kissing an uncle, especially if he's grabbing her by her ass. And
like every holiday, I'd be just looking over. It's like, I still got like 5 more questions for you two.
Yeah.
Okay,
and so I don't want your wedding gift either.
Move on. Move on is
move
the
on.
Answer. Okay.
Move on.
Scenario two is called Hubbies. Hubbies. You've been excited for the wedding for weeks. It's the night before. The rehearsal dinner was a blast. The two of you head upstairs. About to split into two rooms, the two of you embrace for a hug. This is the night before the wedding, by the way.
Yeah.
She looks at you in the eye and says, her eyes are welling up. Her eyes are like getting teary. She says, her bottom lip is quivering. She says, "Steve, I love you. You're so supportive of me, my career, and my choices." You say, "I'm always here for you, baby." She says, "I can't wait for you to be my husband tomorrow, for us to be husbands." "What? You've made this transition so much easier on me and my family. They told me I would never find someone who loves me for who I am. Do you move on or carry on?"
Oh, man. I'm going to get... Listen. You've been married?
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
I don't know how big your wedding was,
But really big.
If it's the night before,
yeah, I'm carrying on.
I'm carrying on.
Woo!
I'm carrying on until like until the honeymoon, and then we got some stuff to iron out, and then I'm moving on.
Yeah, yeah.
The wedding goes as planned, and the marriage probably doesn't, but the wedding day has to go. Because if anything, I'm not losing out on money.
Mike Brill, you moving on or carrying on?
I'm going to have to agree again. It's the price of a wedding alone. It's just
worth
absolutely
on.
Insane. It's like, all right, let me get this technical. I do have a week to get an annulment where it never really happened.
Right,
if I really
right,
want
right.
to. Yeah. You know? It's like, babe, all right, now that we've gone through this whole thing and we both have checks that we can split right now, what did you mean?
Yeah. All right.
What was that?
Yeah.
What was that transition thing we were talking about?
Yeah. I really don't want to make history. I just want to be a normal marriage right now.
I feel like we were on the same page until the night before the wedding.
Uh-huh.
All right. All right. Scenario three. Okay.
That was move on. Carry on was the first one. Move
yeah.
on.
So you had a carry on and you had a just move on.
Carry on.
All right. Scenario three is called... we're going to call family photos, right?
Ooh.
You and your fiance are cuddled by the fire. Okay, you're cuddled by the fire. The wedding is just weeks away. Pretty much tonight.
Tonight is okay. 4 weeks exactly.
Yep.
Wow.
She wants to do a slideshow at the reception, and you're totally into it. You're like, oh, cool, baby pictures flowing around. It's really nice. Okay. You go to your mom's and grab a box of pictures, okay? You guys are sipping delicious wine, rubbing each other's back, reminiscing over the... Look at that cute picture of Steve. Look at that cute picture of you. You know, like, amazing time. Just having a good time. As you get to the bottom of the stack, you take a photo out from a large family reunion. You say, babe, this is my crazy extended family. You get to meet them at the wedding. She makes a strange face. She takes out the same picture and says, this is my extended family. You get to meet them at the wedding. There you are in the same picture as her.
I better play the Clash for this one. Is it marriage or blood? Is it marriage or blood? And
she has the same picture.
I know,
there you guys are as like infants together. You're like fourth cousins or something like that.
I gotta say that's probably a move on.
Move on.
That's probably a move on at that point, just because I think there's laws against that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So
fourth cousins though, like maybe like a super extended family.
No, that's no.
All right, Mike Berlew.
I think I would carry on option to move on.
Whoa!
I didn't know.
It's one of those if like I'm totally in love with her and it's kind of like all right. Or a kid's technically inbred would be the question that I have to research. Like three or four down the road, it's like
I'm in the opposite.
I can barely point out second cousins in my family. So
there are so many other people in this world, and I love my fiance,
yeah.
But
we're not trying to get you in trouble.
No.
These are hypotheticals.
I of course, if it turned out we were related, it's unnecessary.
All right.
Well, that's
she would agree.
She
would agree.
Steve Aspera moves on. You would carry on.
I would carry on with the option to move on. It's like
there's no inserting contract stipulations.
No. I would go on to Ancestry.com and be like, dude, is this freaking weird? And they said yes.
Ancestry.com would be like, send us $30 and we'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do that eventually since I don't know my family background.
All right, guys. Last one. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
All right, move on or carry on. This one's called Up, Bro. Like, uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Up, Bro.
Yeah.
All right. It's the day of your bachelor party, Steve. Your bros have went all out for you. All out. Okay? Craft beer festival, comedy show, even a Thrice concert.
Oh, damn.
Cool guys there.
Yeah, yeah.
Unreal. You are broing so hard. Everyone feels like one cohesive bro unit. Hugs, beer, tears, arm wrestling contests, the whole nine yards. The night is ending. You guys hop back in the bus with your broed out party wagon. One last craft beer as you close, and you're getting close to the brotel that you're staying at. You know? Your best friend Jimmy says, man, I love this hotel. What a night, man. I mean, we all love this hotel. All the bros cheer together like, yeah, we love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah. They're like, hell yeah, we do. You state, yeah, it looks nice. The rooms are sick. They have mirrors on the ceiling, man. You can see everything on the chick. Wow, you say, I'd love to try that on my fiance. Another bro explains, she loves it. She loved it last time. All the guys scream, yeah, she did. Do you carry on or move on?
Mm. I beat on. Beat on my fucking groomsman or whoever's at this bachelor party. And then I... Yeah, hold on. Let me wait for the Clash to chime in before I say that.
Hey, I'm always so fast on the trigger here.
On the ones and twos.
Beat on, that's, I mean, your thing?
No, like...
They all said, yeah, we love it. That was a great time.
Yeah, like they... So the implication is that...
The implication is that the whole bachelor party knows about... Yeah.
That's a move on.
Move on. Mike Berlew, how about you, buddy?
I got to think that's a move on. That's just me too kind of weird and all. People like high-fiving me for my girlfriend, you know?
No, not even that. The thought of any of my friends, close friends, like bachelor party type friends, knowing my fiance and that, you know, that's a move on. That's a move on.
That just seems like a thing, like if you carried on like 2 years ago, like one of your buddies would be like, hey, Cheryl, remember the time when we...
Well, I would know about it. And if I didn't know about it and I was finding out about it at my bachelor party...
Yeah, imagine like your friends had like a... Your fiance had like a little tattoo or something. They're like, yeah, that little shamrock looks good.
Do you know something I don't know?
Oh, no, maybe. You did date my cousin, so maybe this is all real life.
Now it has to get cut. Now this whole thing has to get cut.
Guys, that was move on or carry on. Yeah. Move on or carry on. Steven Sparrow, what's the name of the podcast? Where do we go?
Stick to Beer, soundcloud.com/stick to beer. Thank you if you listen.
All right, Mike Berlew, you...
I already did my
ad.
I closed the computer. I would have no idea what to promote.
I will promote... Okay, so this episode will be up Monday. So I guess the next thing I should promote is... this is where...
Can we promote...
October 7th at East Rutherford, New Jersey?
Yeah, let's do October 6th in East Rutherford, New Jersey. You can come see me and Mike Berlew on the same show. A bunch of other funny comedians. We'll put that up. We'll post it, and you can come see us. More importantly, let's promote Thrice, because they are.
Yeah.
You know what? It made me the happiest man alive today. And you know what? That's all that matters. It made Steve a happy man.
Yeah.
Mike Berlew.
I showed up.
Yeah, you showed up. And you know what? Go download their new album, because if you don't like that, there's something wrong with you, because that album is just powerful and it speaks to people.
And follow, you know, check out Riley's blog, Hermetology, at hermetology.com.
Destroyer.
Pweet Destroyer. He's in another band. I wanted to ask him about this, but there was no real time. He's in another band called Less Art. And I don't know if you've listened to him.
Yep.
Not bad.
Not bad. Not bad at
really
all.
Not bad. They're not Thrice, but they're not bad, and they're worth a listen. So, you know, check out Thrice, Less Art, Pweet Destroyer, Hermetology, anything Thrice related. Check it out.
Good people, good times, and it just shows that, you know, if you're out there and you want to talk to someone, pursue it, man. Pursue it. Because, you know, I got to talk to someone that I've always wanted to talk to. One of the best members of the entire band. Or, it's weird saying that, but one of the guys that really has made a soundtrack to my entire life. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.